Welcome to Pastor Aggressive, real life, real faith, real talk.
Real talk.
Yeah, we're ready to get into this, man. I'm excited about this week. What do you have going on? Anything? What's been your...
Not too much, man. We're getting ready to go on this mission trip in March, and money's getting due, so trying to put back some money for that. Church isn't able to raise money right now for undisclosed reasons, so... I don't know. I'm thinking about maybe going to speak at some churches and present what we're doing out there in Honduras.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool, man.
Fun fact, I actually met our framer at work. His name's Armando. And I was talking to him, and he's a bad framer, dude. I mean, I love this guy, but he's a bad framer. But he's learning. He's super cool, and he's a Christian. I was talking to him today. I asked him, do you believe in Jesus? He's like, yeah. I was like, are you Catholic? Which is kind of racist of me. I assumed because he was, like, Central American that he was Catholic.
Sure.
But he was like, no, Christian. I'm like, oh, bet. And I'm like, where are you from, man? He was from Honduras.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's been here for 18 years.
Yeah, I love that.
So for those of you who don't know, we are going to Honduras. We've been once. It was awesome. It was life-changing. Me and Warren are both giving a presentation on it that you can find online with Mission on the Move. Super cool mission. Super cool orphanage they have up there in Santa Elena in Honduras. And we're blessed to be a part of it and blessed to be able to go. But money is a real thing. So.
Oh, yeah.
Your boy has two vehicles, and they both are pieces of crap. And they cost me a lot of money. So,
If someone wants to donate, they could even reach out to us and donate.
Yeah.
To the show, and we could make sure we get the funding to, obviously both of us are going, so that would be the purpose in that.
And we both need it very much.
We both need it, yeah. But it's such a cool thing. So I talked to Matt today. Matt is our missionary friend who kind of got us onto this and was our team leader this last time. And just a really cool guy. We're going to have him on the show here by the end of the year sometime.
Before Christmas.
Yeah. And so I was talking to him on the phone today and talking about, because I'm leading the team this year and talking about what that looks like and how do we convince people that there's value to what the cost is.
Right.
And one thing he pointed out to me, because I've got a lot of like father-daughter, mother-daughter relationship teams that are thinking going. And he was talking about how serving in that capacity, in that kind of way, together, grows relationships.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this podcast is birthed out of that.
Right.
Because, like, we were already hanging out quite a bit, but, like, that really spurred us to be like, we could do more together and do some of these things. And
we learned that we jive well together.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We talked about this a couple weeks ago. We were talking about our friend Matt and how I didn't really think highly of him before I went. And that was very wrong of me. But after spending time with the guy, he changed my life through Christ. He changed my life. So just getting to know people, Warner's wife, I really got to know her a lot better. And it was just awesome, man. It was super awesome.
And I think that the relational side of that is so important and so vital to the process. That people probably don't even recognize if they haven't been on a mission trip with somebody, or if they've gone and they feel like they're alone and they haven't really done much with a group. To understand that dynamic, you gotta be in the field with somebody, and that doesn't need to be out of the country. But for us, I think that it took us out of our comfort zone, and that helped us to get to know each other better because we were outside of anything. Any of the normal distractions we would have in the country.
Right. I mean, every single day is spent with your team. From the airport, riding on the airplane together, Warner snoring next to you. me sleeping in the room with Matt and me snoring next to Matt. And, you know, normally when you spend time, like when you're a kid and you're hanging out with your best friend or something, you're staying the night during the summer over and over and over again. After a couple of days, you're fed up with them, man.
Yeah.
But by the power of the Holy Spirit, I really didn't get fed up with anybody over the trip. It was, you're spending breakfast, lunch, dinner working with one another, spending time ministering with one another, And the cool thing about going on a mission trip, and anybody who knew me before I went, I'm like, you know, I want to go to minister. I'm not having fun, yada, yada, yada. The craziest thing that happened was that I was ministered to in a deeper way than I could have ever estimated, guessed, or understood, and still don't understand fully, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, is not, don't anticipate anything when you go on. Just expect, just have an expectation that God's going to move, but be flexible with that. And I'm not a very flexible person. We know this. That was one thing Matt and I talked about today, is he's actually going to fly down separate from us.
Oh, no.
And he's like, so you'll just lead the team to the airport. And I said, because I'm so level-headed in an airport situation.
Especially with a lot more people this
time.
Yeah.
It'll be good. I think it's going to be awesome.
God is good. He's faithful. Maybe he's been teaching all these lessons.
Maybe that's why this entire year, from September to September, every trip I've taken, and I've traveled a lot, has had some kind of hiccup.
Yeah, man.
Most of them very bad delays. So
what does James say? Consider it
all joy when you fall into diverse temptation. Well, I always think of Romans 5, because that's my favorite, but I think of Romans 5 when it says that suffering, we rejoice in our suffering because suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not disappoint. And I love to say that verse over and over and over again, but living it is a different story, and really recognizing that and rejoicing in our suffering because I know it's building character and producing hope is a little bit different.
Amen. Yeah. I had something I just wanted to say, but I can't remember. But anybody who's listening, we would obviously encourage you to go on a mission trip. Before I went, I didn't think that it was for me. I thought it was a church vacation, is the literal words I used.
Cause that's right.
There's a lot of fake Christianity going out there, boys and girls. So just go with the right intent. Go with the intent to serve God, and not in any specific way, but know that he will give you the opportunity fully and walk in the Spirit and share that with the people around you. So I would encourage anybody who gets the opportunity. God will give you an opportunity if he wills it, and take that.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Speaking of missions and going places, last weekend I went and did prison ministry.
Yes. How was that?
It was an exciting time, man. And it was such a wild, radical experience that I was not prepared for in any way. And, you know, not that I was not looking forward to it, but I was not looking forward to it. I was like, man, this is a weekend away from my family and my church, and I don't really know what I'm getting into. Like, I had gone through the process of going through the gates already, because we did a training in the prison before we went. But I was like, what is it really going to be like when we're in the conference room and we're doing this thing? And what is it going to be like? And will I really have an impact on people? And my story is not one, like, just my testimony is not very dark, I guess. I don't know.
I see what you're saying.
There's not really a lot of, there were hard times in my past, but not really a lot of, a lot of difficulties in the sense of drugs or alcohol or anything like that.
Sure.
And so I wasn't sure how much of an impact I could have on these guys whose lives are right now in a really dark spot. But it actually was really great, and I got to know these guys at my table really well. We had a wide range of guys. There were 30 guys in there with us, and there was you had guys that were like you would have never guessed would be in prison. Like, if you looked at them, like real clean cut guys, real intelligent, classy guys, and you're like, I don't know. We didn't talk to them about what they did to get in there. A lot of the guys shared, but we weren't supposed to ask them or anything.
Sure.
And so you're just like, I don't know what got this guy in here, but he does not look like the stereotypical, like what I would picture as an inmate in a prison.
Sure.
All the way to, I had one guy that was tattooed, head to toes.
Yeah.
Like his face was tattooed up and everything, like full face. I'm talking not like he had a couple face tattoos, like his entire face was a tattoo. And he was the coolest guy, man. I just got to really know him, and we bonded really well. He was showing me how like the prison, because we ate the prison food with them.
Yikes.
And it's so bad, man. Really? It's so bad.
What was it?
A lot of times it was bologna sandwiches on stale bread with also a peanut butter and jelly on stale bread. So much bread and all of it stale.
Wait, so that's it? Two sandwiches?
Yeah, and then there would be like some kind of side. It'd either be like a vegetable or some cooked noodles that were super soggy and like didn't have any like sauce or seasoning or anything on them. They were just noodles.
Okay.
And so like he was teaching me like how to eat this stuff and get it down and you know, whenever he like a lot of times, there was one time we didn't have sandwiches. It was like this sloppy Joe meat and some noodles and some vegetables and stuff. And he just like mixed it all together, put some hot sauce on it. And, he's like, when you mix it all together, it's called a slam. And so,
yeah, I've heard that.
So we were figuring out, like, he showed me how to make slams all weekend long. And then, but these things that kept coming up were these peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that they make.
Uh-huh.
But it's like this pre-mixed together peanut butter and jelly.
I've seen that.
And dude, it's like concrete mix. It is. This stuff is awful.
Oh, man.
But we brought in for them, like we were able to bring in pre-packaged like snacks and stuff.
Sure.
And so we would bring like Ding Dongs and Twinkies and stuff from our conference room and bring it to lunch with us. And we started like pulling apart these peanut butter and jellies and putting all these like Hostess cakes and stuff and like smashing it together. And so then we started calling that the Slamwich. And dude, that was like
the Slamwich.
Yeah, but like just that like fun thing of like him getting to teach me something that was like goofy and just his so life. Lighthearted.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Like that really helped us to bond. And then
so were these guys Christians or were they seeking?
Okay, so some of the guys, I don't know the whole gamut of like all 30 of them, although at the end, the closing ceremony, the testimonies were unreal, man. Like I feel like everyone encountered Jesus at this thing. But some of the guys, like, so there was different, there were a lot of Christians. My table was a bunch of Christians, but one of the guys was actually an Odinist, which...
Oh, yeah.
I just learned a little bit about this.
Sure.
But apparently it's really big in prison. But I think it's from, like, a affiliation protection kind of way. So you know what I mean?
Describe what is an Odinist.
So, you're probably familiar with the Marvel Comics hero Thor, right?
Odin is his father.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. So Thor and Odin and all those guys are like ancient, like Norse gods, like Vikings worshipped them.
Sure, yeah.
And so that's, they just worship the god Odin. Although it seemed like more, at least the guys I was talking to that claimed to be Odinists, it seemed like more of them, came out of that place of like, you know, addiction recovery. A lot of the STEP programs have like submit to a higher power, right?
Sure.
And so some of these guys, it seemed like the guys I was talking to, they kept saying their higher power. They never called him Odin. And sure. So I think it was just like, I have to have a higher power and I'm going to pick like this thing that I don't have to really commit to. You know what I mean? And so it's like, all right,
sure.
Pick one of these pantheon gods from, you know, 500-600 years ago and just figure out, you know, pick one of those. So that's what it seemed like more. But one of the conversations I had with one of the guys, and this I felt like was my opportunity, because I was like, man, I'm not going to force like my beliefs on you. I'm here to encourage you and show you the love of Jesus, but I'm not going to like force baptize you and tell you like you gotta, you know, like I'm not leaving here till you say the sinner's prayer or something, you know.
Yeah.
But what I did, I said, I'm not going to force my beliefs on you, but you keep saying your higher power and all this stuff, and I'm like, but I want to tell you that you can personally know the highest power, and that's through Jesus Christ, and that's the only way you're ever going to get there. And so we had that conversation and I felt like that really made an impact. And then you know, we were talking about like when are some times you felt the presence of God or you felt Christ with you, and having that discussion, he was just like, you know, all of my experiences were not really like good experiences with people who proclaimed Christ. But then at the end of the weekend, he's like, this is the like most loved I've ever felt, the most fun I've ever had, and the most like I felt like part of something, you know?
Sure.
And so, yeah, I don't know, man. There's all kinds of... that's the thing with... with the idea of like submitting to a higher power. And I think that's such a great thing, and I think it is so vital to the recovery, addiction recovery process. And you know, we're getting ready to start this recovery group, and we use a faith-based, like Christian faith-based steps program, but you know, and so it says God, you know,
right.
But anyone could say like, well, who is God and who do I say God is, or you know, all those sort of things. But I think there's a drastic difference, and I think that's what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to do more research, but I feel like I don't know, this feels like the thing to talk about, so I'm just going to kind of go into some of it, and if we don't get us, we can probably do a deeper dive maybe later on. But one thing I noticed with all these guys, and they're you know, I'm sure there were some Muslim guys there, and you know, guys from different faiths and everything like that. But the thing I noticed about the difference between all of those religions is where the hope comes from, and that there's just a, when Christianity is done the way it's supposed to be done, there is a level of love and respect that cannot be matched by any other faith.
Sure.
But I think too often it's not done the right way. And it comes off as a bunch of rules that you have to follow rather than following a person who is the ultimate power of the universe, you know?
So this is interesting. I love talking about the Ten Commandments and what they mean. Like, are they a set of rules? Are they for your good or are they for your detriment?
This is a good conversation.
And I was listening to this guy speak today, actually, and he was talking about in the original language it was written in, I'm not sure what it would have been written in, and he didn't specify, probably Hebrew. He said it could be translated thou shall not, or what did he say? Thou will not. Saying, you know, guys, like, I've delivered you from Egypt, I've delivered you from slavery, now you will not do this, you will not do that, you will not do this. Almost like a promise.
Because you know, it's a promise. I was telling those guys that in the prison. I was saying, you know, we get this idea that Christianity is a rule book because God has all these laws for his people. But when you look at the laws, when you step back and look at them from the perspective of how God brought them to his people in the context of, like, they were an answer to outside culture, right?
Sure.
Like, all of them have to do with, like, don't do this thing like these people do.
Sure.
And the reason, it's like you said, it's like a promise. Every single one of those things is because it's for his people's benefit.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. Like, the things that God tells us to do or says we should do, if done in a society, would make the most perfect society.
Right. And what we should be asking ourselves is, what is God's intent on doing it? Like, He doesn't owe us telling us how we should live.
Right.
And he's doing it for our betterment. He's not some wrathful, he is wrathful, but in a just way. He's not some, like, I want to say jealous, but he is jealous in a certain way. But just some, like, dictator,
but
tyrant.
You just mentioned wrath and jealousy, and we think of those in, like, our human terms and what those mean in our language.
Yeah.
But in the sense of God, it's the perfect versions of those things.
Sure.
And those two things in perfection are justice.
Sure.
So, like, those sound like bad words when we say God is jealous or God is wrathful, but it's in the context of his holiness.
Yeah, I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day about, like, words and what we've done to words. And for example, this is a touchy subject, but you think of the word slavery and you think of American slavery, you know, which was awful. But the word slavery, this guy's telling me, he's like, you know, you can use it in, like, a metaphorical way, or you can use it in the sense that it means. And he thought the sense that it means is, like, chattel slavery, like taking people from their homes and making them work for us for free. Or there's wage slavery, which we arguably live in today.
We definitely live in today.
We live in a society where you work or you die, or you work or you gain nothing if you're secular and that's what you think.
Yeah.
But that's the cool thing about Jesus is he frees you from that. But the word slavery in itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like, we are slaves to Christ. We are bondservants of Christ, because either you're a slave to Christ or you're a slave to Satan in the big picture. So the way we understand words now, and this is the hard part about translating the Bible, is the way we use words now is not the way words were necessarily used. Like when Jesus says to be the salt of the earth,
mm-hmm.
I always thought of that like taste, which it could be like taste, or it could be salt was used to preserve food, to stop preserve food from decaying.
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe what he's saying in that is for us to be a light in the world that is stopping the world from decaying.
We are to prevent the decay of society. Yeah. That is what he calls us to do. And it's, you know, you talk about slavery, and that is a touchy subject because the word has so many negative connotations and it has such a brutal history, especially in our country, but not just in our country, but
right.
definitely
since the beginning of time.
Yeah, yeah. But when you look at it, like when God's people were in servitude to each other,
mm-hmm.
it's exactly like what we're talking when you talk about like debt, basically.
Sure.
Like, they would, if they got into a place where they were having a hard time maintaining their homestead or their land or whatever, they could give it to another member of their tribe.
Sure.
For a time and work for them. And then once they'd worked off a certain amount of time, then get their stuff back.
Which is arguably good slavery.
Well, and it's not even like slavery. It's like the person that they are in servitude to was to protect the person who was their servant. It was to protect their property and their land.
Sure.
And keep it from having to get sold.
Sure.
And so it's like, it's really, in the context of God's people, it was meant to be taking care of each other. But what happens is then man gets involved and brings up their own ideas, and then they see, oh, I can make this guy work for me. And then sure. I can give him a place to live and then treat him lesser than, and then suddenly then now I'm in control. I have all the power. That's what happens to everything. Anytime someone goes into business for themselves,
yeah.
that's when things get messed up. I just use a wrestling term because I'm really into pro wrestling.
Yeah.
But that's what, like, when someone is like, spoilers for anyone who doesn't know this, I hate to ruin it for you, wrestling is scripted. but what happens sometimes in the wrestling business is they're supposed to follow the script. But sometimes a guy will go into business for himself and think he knows better than what the script says, right?
Yeah.
And then he'll, like, actually hurt a person, or he'll actually, like, hold the person down for a pin when he was supposed to be the guy that lost.
Yeah.
And now the whole thing's screwed up because he went into business for himself.
Right.
That's a wrestling term. And that's kind of like, that's how slavery went from the servitude to protect someone's tribe and their own family
yeah.
to the slavery that we've experienced in the modern world
yeah.
is somebody saw an opportunity to go into business for themselves.
Yeah, it's not, this is what I was trying to explain to this guy, but man, I could not get to him because it is a touchy subject.
It is a touchy subject, and you and I are not the guys that should be talking about slavery, but if we understand everything through that lens
yeah.
of like, God had an intended purpose for everything,
right?
And then man brought in his own agenda, and that's what ruins everything.
Right. Something you said about old slavery is like them paying off debt in a protected sense. It made me think, right on topic, how in Christianity do we pay off debt, quote unquote, do we pay off debt, and how does that align with other religions?
Mm.
So I'll give my answer.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
I think is, I don't think we pay off our debt, and I think you'd agree with that. Our debt is paid by the blood of Christ.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, not like sure. a financial sense.
No. In the big, the capital W or
capital
D
universe, yeah, yeah.
whatever. I don't think we pay off our debt. Our debt is paid by the perfect sacrifice, but our works aren't gone after that. After that, we still work. In a way, it's hard to understand, and it's hard for me to even understand that. I don't feel like I'm paying for my salvation, but I am. I do want to do good works in reaction to what Christ has done for me.
Yeah, it's a response to grace rather than a means to earn it.
Right, and I think that's what differentiates Christianity from other religions like Islam or Hinduism, if you even consider that a religion, or if it's a spiritual belief.
No, I think it is considered a religion. I had this conversation with somebody at my table. He was talking about how he didn't feel like he deserved forgiveness or deserved grace.
He's right.
And I said, that's how all of us are, man. Yeah. I said, and then so I went into the whole, you know, difference between mercy and grace. I said, mercy is not getting the punishment you deserve, right?
Mm-hmm.
But grace is actually getting something positive that you don't deserve.
Yeah.
And so it's like we get those things mixed up, and I think culturally we intermingle the two and we use the wrong word for the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But like mercy is not getting a negative thing.
Yeah.
Grace is getting a positive thing that you don't deserve.
Right.
Both of them are things you like, not getting what you deserve, but one is getting something you don't deserve versus not getting what you do deserve.
Yeah, it's like going to court for a speeding ticket and the judge is like, well, I'm going to pay your ticket and I'm going to give you $1 million.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the mercy would be not making you pay the ticket. Yeah. The grace is him giving you what you would have paid for the ticket.
Yeah. And so I think that's like, you know, I unfortunately, maybe to my own detriment, watch way too many videos of, there's this place called Speaker's Corner. I think it's in Britain or England, somewhere over there where they speak good English, where all these people come to this park and there's Muslims out there practicing Dawah. Dawah is what they call it, is like our evangelizing. And then there's a lot of Orthodox Christians. I don't really see any Protestant Christians out there, like debating with them, and sometimes it's very unfruitful, but sometimes it is fruitful. And I've seen some super fruitful conversations of all those guys are talking about theology and like more like open-handed topics sometimes, or like a lot of Muslims just don't understand the Trinity and this and that. But the main difference is that I see most of the time is just guys with a good heart, like the guy I talked about last podcast. I can't remember his name right now for some reason, but David Lynn, he'll go and he'll ask, how do you think you get to heaven?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you know if you're going to heaven?
Wow.
And most studied Muslims don't know if they're going to heaven or not.
Mm.
They believe in all that, like, if I die, there's something in the Quran that says that Christians and Jews will pay your way into heaven. They don't know if they're going to go to heaven. They think if they die, then they will be judged according to their works, if they'll get into heaven or not. But the problem with that is, how do you ever know if you did good enough? And does breaking the law, sinning one time, divide you from that eternity in heaven? I would say it does.
Yeah.
I would say God's law is not there to damn us out of heaven, but it's there to show us that we can't make it in there by our own works.
Yeah, exactly. God's law exposes our inability to be righteous.
And it's the same thing with the Hebrew Israelites. Have you seen the Hebrew Israelites? No, it's this like, I knew where you're about to go with that. It's like these, this sect of quote-unquote Christians who believe only descendants of Abraham, like in the lineage, not in a...
Oh, like physical sense.
Metaphorical sense. Yeah. They think only those people are going to heaven, and they think Jesus is telling us in his gospel to uphold the commandments. And Jesus says, if you love me, you will keep my commandments.
Yeah.
What does that mean? So, like, these people think once you're, like, by having faith in Jesus, you're supposed to uphold the commandments, and it is your, like, duty to uphold the commandments, other than animal sacrifice. So they believe in, like, all the Levitical law.
So just not the animal sacrifice part of it.
Yeah, for some reason. I don't know where they get that from.
Interesting.
They take all types of stuff. They don't believe that Paul's writings are inspired.
Even though Peter, who it was a Jew, says that Paul's writings are scripture.
They think Peter denies Paul because they say Paul says something wrong in Romans about circumcision, and then Peter corrects him, and it's like, if this is holy, then how could it be wrong? God is not the author of confusion and this and that.
Yeah, but in that he, that's the whole. I could get fired up, buddy.
They're they go crazy, man. I think it's mostly a black movement, because it's very like Jesus describes himself in Revelation.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Are you talking about Black Israel, which is like...
Same thing.
Yeah.
Hebrew Israelites.
My first encounter with them was I was in New York for a WrestleMania with some friends, and we were on Times Square, and we were walking down the street, and I'm just like looking at everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And I look down at the sidewalk, and there's these big poster boards with like stories that looked like stories I knew, but like there's like an African guy talking to a burning bush, and an African guy defeating a giant, and I'm like, wait, what's going on here? So I look up, and there's this dude in a king's robe and a crown, and he's shouting, and it was this group they were talking about, and I was like, oh, I want to talk to these guys, I want to see what's up. And then my friend that was with me was like, no, you don't want to see what's up, they think you're the devil for real. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, those guys go to bat, man. They sit out there on the corner, and like the way they read scripture is they'll like repeat the same, but they'll take like a fragment of a verse. They won't even read the whole verse, and they'll be like, "What did it say?" And then the guy will repeat it. And they'll be like, "What did it say?" And the guy will repeat it.
Yeah,
and it's like
they think that Africans are the true Israelites. Is that
not just Africans, but they do, they rely heavily on blackness, like blackness,
yeah.
And there's so many times where like Jesus said, I think it's Jesus says, there's no Jew, there's no Gentile, maybe it's Paul,
that's Paul says that,
but they don't affirm Paul, so,
so they don't
Paul's a blasphemer, so I don't know, that's just like one of them. Even in Christianity we have Jehovah's Witnesses, so it's like, which I personally wouldn't ascribe Christianity to either of those two groups.
No, I wouldn't.
Because I think they've fallen from the truth that Jesus obviously proclaims to us. And sometimes it's not so obvious, so I can't just say that. It's not like Muslims, one of their big things is like, show to me in the Bible where Jesus explicitly says he's God. Well, he doesn't literally say, I am God. But he says, what?
Well, he does use... when Moses is talking to God, he's talking to the burning bush, and he says, who shall I say sent me? And he says, tell them I am sent you.
Yeah.
The superlative that he uses, that I am, is the same one Jesus says when he says, when they're talking about, when they say Abraham is our father, and he says, before Abraham was...
I am.
And that's why they pick up rocks to stone him, because they're like, that's blasphemous. So that's the one I always go to. Because that is where he says that he's God. But it's in a, I guess, in a roundabout way, I guess you could say. But I mean, that's... But then here's the other one I always say, because if you don't like that one, Thomas... When he says that he won't believe that Jesus is resurrected unless he touches the wounds in his hands, right? Yeah. And then he goes to Jesus, and Jesus shows him his hands. Thomas bows down and says, my Lord and my God.
Yeah.
If Jesus did not claim to be God, then he would have been like, dude, get out of here, you're blasphemous.
Yeah. Or,
right? Like, he would not take the worship of God if he didn't claim to be God.
Right. Or John 1:1. And everybody always goes to John 1:1.
Yeah.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
Yep.
So, I don't know, man. I don't think there's any way to dance around that Jesus is God.
Yep.
Which, his resurrection gives more authority to his claims that through him you will obtain salvation.
Yep.
And through faith in him you will obtain salvation, not by works. And I think Paul makes that, anybody that's listening and doesn't believe this, read the book of Romans through and through. Don't pick and choose your Hebrew Israelite verses.
Right.
Actually go through the book of Romans, and he explicitly says multiple times that you will not be saved by your works.
Yeah.
And I do think Paul's an apostle of Christ,
inspired
by the Holy Spirit to write these writings.
And, people talk about James and contradicting the other apostles in his writings and saying that faith without works are dead. I don't think he does. In fact, there's a disagreement and axe between some of them about that.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of say, I feel like that's where they clear it up. That like they're on the same page. They're just saying it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like what we were just talking about, that we're not doing these things to serve, to earn our salvation or earn the grace or earn our righteousness. But we're doing this thing because we have received the grace and the righteousness of Jesus.
Yeah.
They're like, I want to live how he wants me to live because he has given me this grace. I want to show love to those guys in prison because Christ has shown love to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? I want to feed the hungry because Christ has provided for me and fed me, you know? Like, so I don't, that it's not about trying to earn something. It's about wanting, or trying to even pay something back. It's more about just wanting to share what God has given me.
Right. Yeah, it's like when I hear faith without works is dead. Because I don't think, I agree with you, I don't think Jesus says, what does he say? I can't remember the exact quote, but he says something about the word will never fall away. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He says the word, man, I should know this better. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking
about.
We're both tired. He says, my word will never fall away. Let me see if I can.
I think he says the law. I'm pretty sure he says something about the law never falling away. So the law, in a way, is to be upheld. But upholding the law isn't the means to salvation. Now, to make abundantly clear, I don't think you should take the gospel of Jesus and say, now I can go on sinning, doing whatever I want to do, because I have faith in Jesus. Well,
right.
Then maybe you don't have faith in
Jesus. Yeah, you probably don't have faith in Jesus then. It's Matthew 24:35. He says, heaven and earth will pass away, but my word will never pass away.
Yeah. Well, I guess that has nothing. There's a verse about like a tittle of the law or something like that will never pass away.
We need a producer that looks all this stuff up while we're talking.
But I think that's the difference in Christianity, is that we are saved by faith. And what does that look like? It, like so many people say, because you can know of Christ but not know Christ. So that's the problem with the law. Is like you can uphold, like the young rich ruler. The young rich ruler claimed to perfectly uphold the law. This video I was watching of this Protestant guy interviewing Hebrew Israelites. They claim to uphold the law, and then this Hebrew Israelite guy starts cursing them out. And it's like, well, now what do? You don't go. You can't sacrifice for the sin. You can't atone for your own sin. There's only one who atones for our sin. And I think Muslims kind of believe the same thing, that they can't atone for their own sin, but then I think their faith just falls apart.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the New American Standard, because that's just the easiest translation to read, I think. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke of a letter shall pass from the law until all is accomplished.
Yeah.
I would love to see, I need to do a deep dive on this, if that word accomplished is the same he says in the end when he says it is finished. In the Greek. That'd be an interesting thing to look at.
Like, you think maybe he was just talking about his ministry on earth?
Well, I don't know if that. Maybe. That's a good deep dive. Maybe for next time. Yeah, that's. I think I will look into that. That's cool. So it's Matthew 5:18.
I want to make it abundantly clear, though, that like I don't hate Muslims.
Oh, no, me neither.
I don't hate Hindus. I don't hate Hebrew Israelites. I wish that you would come to the truth. And the thing is, Muslims, you guys affirm Jesus. You affirm the Bible. You believe that Injil was corrupted. But nowhere in your Quran does it teach that the Injil was corrupted. So read it. Read it and come to the truth of what Jesus is teaching. Find proof that the Injil was corrupted and present it to me. And I'd be happy to hear that. Translations aren't different books. You don't have to know Greek or Hebrew to know the truth of Jesus. And he makes it abundantly clear the way which we will be saved and who he was. And if he is who he says he was, then we should treat him that way and not treat him like he's just a prophet or a good teacher or a man of wisdom, that he is a son of God and God in the flesh and eternal. And he's been eternally planning this. Well, I guess if you're eternal, you don't plan. He's been eternally knowing that this time was going to come. And he presented himself to the world. And it's up to each and every one of you guys to read the gospel, discover the historical accuracy of the gospel, because there's a ton of it. I won't sit here and lie like I came to the faith and I was just 100% sure. I had a lot of studying and a lot of unsuredness. Is Jesus who he really claims to be? And, you know, a lot of guys helped me through that. Cliff Henschel, or whatever his name is.
Connectly, yeah.
Really helped me through that. Speaker's Corner really helped me through that. Because I wondered, like, Muslims are so sure of their faith. Islam is the true religion to them. The true God. Allah is the true God to them. Who's to say they're not right? And I would encourage each and every one of you to study these other religions and make sure that you're worshiping the God that you're being called to worship.
Yeah. And the reality is, when you do that study, if you're honest with yourself, if you're intellectually honest, as Cliff Connectly always says, if you're intellectually honest with yourself, you'll find that the evidence that Christ is Lord is the clear and obvious answer. Yeah. You have to be honest with yourself, and you have to like do the research and see. I think the way to sum it up, and this is where it all kind of comes full circle with that, is that if you believe in Jesus, like that he existed and that he said the things that he said, and you believe him to be true, then he has to be who he says he is, and he claims to be God. If you look at those scriptures the way we do,
right,
then he claims to be God. And so he, I think it was C.S. Lewis said, that Jesus is either a liar, a lunatic, or he's Lord.
Yeah.
And so most of these other religions that affirm that Jesus existed will either call him a good prophet or a good teacher.
Yeah.
But a good teacher and a good prophet would not lie and claim to be God. Well, and they could not be a good teacher or a good prophet if they were a lunatic.
Well, that's why they say that the Bible is corrupted. And Islam teaches that Jesus never even died on the cross. Did you know that?
Yeah, I do know that.
So they teach that like God put up like a fake Jesus to like, I don't know, trick or deceive the people. And it's like...
But then God is not a God of confusion, so why would he do that?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think the whole story of Muhammad receiving the revelation of the Lord is sketch in itself. There were no witnesses. The cool thing about the Bible is people act like we don't have proof, but there's so many witnesses in the Bible and outside of the Bible from early writings, Josephus and all these other early church fathers who actually witnessed Christ, and people who weren't even Christians.
Josephus was just a Jewish historian, and he claims that, you know, he says that Christ's followers claim to have seen him die and resurrected. And that's the other thing, is you talk about the disciples and how they died. This could be a topic for a whole other week, and it probably would have to be. But when you talk about the disciples and how they all died, no one would die that miserable of a death for a lie.
For a lie.
Just wouldn't be impossible. But I will say this. When we talk about Muhammad and we talk about like Joseph Smith from Mormonism, I don't necessarily think those guys were lying about their experience. Because I believe... both of them said that they claimed to have seen an angel that provided them with this information.
Both of them said it was the angel Gabriel, I believe.
Right. But I think, and actually I think it's Mormonism that says an angel of light. The only time the Bible ever refers to an angel of light, it's talking about Lucifer.
Satan will come as an angel of light.
Yeah. And so I believe that they were deceived by... I believe it was an angel. That just was probably... a fallen angel.
Isn't it Paul that said...
deceived them.
Isn't it Paul that said something like, even if an angel of the light comes to me proclaiming that the gospel is not true?
Paul says, if I or, and he names a couple other guys, or anyone else, even an angel comes to you preaching a different gospel, turn them away.
Yeah,
but these guys didn't. I mean, and so I don't know. I hate that, because I really don't believe that, at least initially, either one of those guys, Joseph Smith, who wrote the Book of Mormon, or Muhammad, I don't think either one of them initially started out with a lie that they wanted to deceive people.
Yeah.
But I believe they themselves were deceived.
Yeah.
And what happens when people start listening to you is ego and pride get in the way, and then now you've got to hold up this thing that you don't, maybe you, you know, falls apart underwater.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing about Islam is that there were witnesses, and the witnesses wrote their own, like, stories, or they told stories of Muhammad in these hadiths. You ever heard of that?
Yeah.
So there's, like, Muslims that believe in just the Quran. There's Muslims that believe in also the hadiths. And they say some pretty incriminating stuff about Muhammad.
Yeah.
Like him marrying a 9-year-old, or not marrying, marrying her at 6 and then having sex with her at 9 years old. Or him getting raped by demons. There's a story of him getting raped by 3 demons.
Man.
And it's like,
that's wild.
So his followers are telling these stories, telling stories about jihad and Muslim conquering. So these guys who are followers of Islam are telling you stories about Muhammad, your prophet, the one that received revelation, committing evil acts and allowing evil acts. So Muhammad is directly defying, the Muslims believe in the Torah, they believe in the law, they believe in the Injil, which we have. But Muhammad is directly going against both these books.
Yeah.
So how could it be true? You have a contradiction within the Quran then.
Yeah.
So it's like, it is a prideful thing, I think. You know, you're raised in this religion, you're taught that it's true. Everyone around you believes. Christians do this.
Yeah.
And they don't ever come to the fullness of Christ and the truth of Christ because they're so caught up in their religion of Christianity. And that's why I struggled for a long time to even call myself a Christian, bro. I'm not a Christian. I'm a follower of Christ. And I just encourage everybody to seek Christ. Even if you don't believe, what do you have to lose, man? While you're laying your head down tonight, ask him if he's real. And he'll reveal himself to you, man.
That's a beautiful sentiment, man. I think that you said something that kind of made me chuckle, but I think that's a beautiful sentiment. The thing that made me chuckle was when you said, here, I'm not a Christian, I'm a follower of Christ. But the term Christian was, in the Roman culture, a derogatory term for the Jews who followed Jesus.
Yeah.
They were calling them basically little Christs.
Yeah.
But then they like adopted that and were like,
yeah.
All right, yeah, cool, that's us.
Christianos.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's good stuff, man. This is a good conversation. Again, we just start riffing, and then here we've been talking to each other for an hour, feels like nothing. So
yeah, we riffed on this one, boys and girls. Next one, it's going to be hot.
Yeah.
We're ready for the next one.
Yeah, we're going to start having some guests on here. Again, send us your questions. Did you drop a question in my pastor box?
No, what it said.
You sure did. I know you did. It said, why
prophets? That was me.
That was you.
How'd you know?
Because that's such a thing for you to... Yeah, anyway.
What do you think about that?
It'll come up. Why Protestant? Because I think that it's... Personally, I believe that it strips away all of the pageantry and allows people to be in the Word, which God gave to all of us, rather than relying on a person that we've set up on a pedestal.
Sure.
That's my own personal thoughts. That's a whole topic for another night. But I gotta get going on my Bible study, bud.
Yeah.
So, with that, I guess I'll just remind everyone that God's truth won't back down, and neither should you. Stay relentless, stay focused, and above all, stay aggressive for God's glory.
Amen.
God bless.